Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, world. Welcome once again to Tuesday Talk with Key West Lou. I am your host, Louis Patron. Another exciting week, another terrible week. Our world is in terrible shape. There are wars and threats of wars all over the earth. We are engaged in too many wars, I believe. And things just aren't good. They aren't good. Politically, we got a bunch of nuts running for office. On the Republican side, I'm sorry, my Republican friends, but I think the Republican candidates just aren't right yet. They haven't come up with the right type person. The Republicans do not realize they need a change in appearance. The Republican Party, once the strength of America, the party of Abraham Lincoln, is no more the strength of America. It's not middle America. People stick to it religiously, and I don't know why, when it is their party that's contributing to screwing up the government. I'm not saying the Democrats are not without sin. Anyhow, let me get into some interesting things this evening. You're going to find them very interesting, I'm going to tell you. I'm going to talk about Saudi Arabia first. What I'm going to tell you is just a brief synopsis of my column in my newspaper column in this week's Conk Life, which hit the newsstands yesterday. We are told, we read, we hear on TV that Saudi Arabia is a close ally of the United States, and it seems for some reason, whether it's a Republican administration or a Democrat administration, they think, or they pretend to think, and they let the people of America know that they believe that Saudi Arabia is our friend, a very close ally of the United States. And I say this, if they're a close ally of the United States, why did they give us $4 a gallon gasoline? Why is it that 17 of the 21 perpetrators of 9/11 were citizens of Saudi Arabia? And why is it, this is a today problem, that Saudi Arabia is openly supporting ISIS? Our news media don't let us know these things. They don't blow it up. But Saudi Arabia supports ISIS while this is in Syria, this is in Iraq, and this is while our boys and girls are getting killed and maimed. Now, there's an hypocrisy involved in what I'm going to detail to you now. It's a mockery, too. 2 years ago, Saudi Arabia became a member of the United Nations Human Rights Council. That in and of itself is a joke. They became a member of the United Nations Human Rights Council. I mean, this is a country that beheads people, lots of them. So does ISIS, by the way. And their numbers in beheading this year are exceeding last year's numbers. Last year's was something in the 80s for the total year. This year so far is just 3 less than last year. So business is up. More people are losing their heads in Saudi Arabia. Now, because the number of people being beheaded is going up, they need more swordsmen. They need executioners. They need men to stand there with that big sword and chop people's heads off. So what did they do? They advertised. You heard me. Saudi Arabia advertised for 8 more swordsmen. The job description, beheading. And it also said that the individuals must possess a willingness to sever heads, of those convicted of crimes. They need 8 more. Can you imagine? Now, would you believe there is a civil service ministry in Saudi Arabia, and the civil service ministry said, though we have entrance exams and conditions for employment, et cetera, all conditions are exempted, except the individual must possess a willingness to sever heads. Pretty good. And, of course, besides severing heads, they must also do amputations. You know, if you're caught stealing, they chop your hands off. For some reasons, they'll chop your ear off. They must also be willing to do that, the swordsman. And all of these executions and amputations come into play because the courts apply Islamic Sharia law, and that law says you do these things. This does not this is not consistent with the way we think. I think the whole thing's hypocrisy. I think it's a mockery. Because why is it? Because right now, today, Saudi Arabia is out there talking to everyone in the UN. Saudi Arabia wants to be the next president of the Human Rights Council. Not only did they remember, now they want to head it. They want to be president. The election's in December of this year to take office in 2016. Which brings me to another part of this advertisement. The job is listed under religious jobs, quote unquote, religious jobs. Under the religious jobs section is this ad that I just told you about where they're looking for 6 new beheaders. Now, this is hypocrisy. This is a joke. They want to head the UN Human Relations Commission. We're going to be beheading people all over the world if they get to head it. Countries will do more terrible things than they've been doing, will do things that they have been doing that are terrible, knowing they're going to be able to get away with it now. Read my column in Conk Life this week. It's very detailed on this issue. I guarantee you will enjoy. Which now brings me to a topic that is distasteful, that it's hard to talk about, but it's a fact of life. Let's start this way. I don't know if you're aware, and by the way, I did a television show on this 3 years ago, a full hour of TV on the subject matter of what I'm going to tell you now, and also followed it up with a column in Conk Life. Berlin today, Berlin, is the sex capital of the world. Not Bangkok, not Amsterdam. Berlin is the sex capital of the world. And how did this all come about? Well, several years ago, the German government, as we are aware, they like to make money. They're very smart business investors. They know how to handle money. They're excellent bankers. But look what they've done to the Euro Union. They've screwed the Euro Union. You've got Greece, Italy, Spain, Portugal. They can't pay the debt back, and Germany is pressing them like hard-ass bankers to pay it back. Because Germany's making money out of all of this. The joke of it all is when the Euro Union was being formed, Germany was out in a leadership role telling all these countries, we're all going to be friends, we're going to be one family, and we're going to share monies with each other and help each other out. It's a new world. Well, did Germany keep its word? No way. They're out there persecuting and prosecuting these people, these countries that owe them money. The reason I talked about this is why has Berlin become the sex capital of the world? Well, several years ago, the German government said, hey, there's a lot of prostitution in this country. We can make money off this if we can legalize prostitution. We can tax it as a business. And look at all the money we're going to make. So they went out. And they made it a legal occupation in Germany to be a prostitute. Of course, you got to pay taxes. The whorehouses, the escort services, and even the streetwalkers must pay taxes. And the government's making a ton of money off this. I mean, just to give you an example, the streetwalkers, the ladies of the night who just walk the street, a car drives by, and one solicits the other, and the girl gets in the car, goes and parks in some alley, does her duty, gets paid, and leaves. You know how they collect their taxes from them? Because that would be very hard. On the streets where the girls work, there are like parking meters. You put your money in, I think it's €6 a night, and a piece of paper comes out. And that says you paid your taxes for the night, because if the police stop you, they're going to arrest you if you didn't pay your taxes. And not only, and for this, I want you to know that the German government gave these women who worked the streets, the lowest of the low type prostitutes, a benefit. They built wood parking garages, huge wood parking garages in different neighborhoods, so the girls wouldn't have to go into a dark alley and so forth, where they could take their customers into this wood facility, this wood garage with partitions, do their thing and leave, and this way be safe and secure. Now, turns out they're making a lot of money, the German government. They're making a ton of money, the German government, off prostitution, off taxing prostitution. Here's another immorality situation. Anyhow, things were so good and are so good in a very short period of time with prostitution that the German government says, can we expand our prostitution laws so that we make even more money? Well, and they came up with this idea. And this is the law, my friends, which I am telling you now. This is the law in Germany. Bestiality. You know what bestiality is? Sex with animals. Bestiality brothels. Bestiality is permitted in the brothels. It's got to be in a house of ill repute, a house of prostitution, whorehouse. Sex with animals can be by the customer with the animal, or the customer can watch a girl with the animals. This is in Germany. And they added this to the mix, and they're making even more money now off this prostitution game. What's strange about the law, and this makes me laugh a little bit in Germany, is that using animals for pornography purposes is illegal. You can't make a movie with an animal and a sex act with a human. However, actual sex with an animal in a prostitution situation in a brothel is legal. Hypocrisy again. Now, how did I get into this? Why did I come back after 3 years to talk about prostitution? I've never talked about bestiality before. And here's how I got into it. I read this past week that just last week, a German prostitute, a streetwalker, who did some of her guys in her one-bedroom apartment, was keeping a sheep. And she purportedly was keeping the sheep as a pet. A sheep is not a domestic animal. Even in the United States, I don't think we could keep a sheep in our homes to raise and be a pet because they're just not domesticated. She was obviously keeping it for other reasons, though she told the police, this is my pet. And when they found out, they took the sheep away from her because you can only do it in a brothel, and she's a one-lady operation, this woman. So it's illegal to keep a non-domesticated animal in your home. That's how I got into this again. I read about this, and I said, oh, my God. And that brought me to the woman with the ram, brought me to, or the sheep, brought me to bestiality in general in Germany, and brought me back to the story of 3 years ago about prostitution and it being taxed in Germany. Another point. The way the Germans convinced the people and their own legislature to go for this legalizing prostitution, they said, look, these poor girls are out there. They work hard, and they have no pension plan, and they have no health insurance or any benefits. Once we tax them, we'll be able to arrange pension plans, health plans, and so forth. Good luck. Just like the Germans took care of their fellow members of the Euro Union, they took care of the prostitutes. No, not to this day does a pension plan or a hospitalization plan exist for the girls working the streets or the houses. The government's never followed up, yet they're grabbing all this extra money, big money in taxes, and it is big money because Berlin is the sex capital of the world today. Now we're going to go to Cleveland, talk about a policeman for a moment. We're all aware from what we read in the news this week that in 2012 in Cleveland, and a black man and a woman in a car, unarmed, drove by a police station, and their car backfired. 13 police officers jumped in cars and gave chase because they assumed this black couple, had shot at the police station. You can't do that. And they gave chase, and it was a high-speed car chase. And they finally got the car to pull over. And what did they do? Someone says there's a gun. They have a gun. And let me tell you up front, no gun was ever found in the car, okay? And there were it was backfiring, not gunshots. But those 13 police officers, when the car stopped, jumped out of their cars and put 137 bullets. This is the testimony in the trial. Put 170 bullets in that car in 15 seconds. A disgrace. Now there's an officer by the name of Michael Brillo. Michael Brillo, he's a real hotshot. He just doesn't put the bullets in the car. He jumps on the hood of the car, and pumps in 15 more bullets directly into the windshield. When the police opened the door to see how the people were, obviously they were both dead. One had 23 bullet wounds, the other 24 bullet wounds. Now, the authorities charged one police officer, and I think this is their mistake. They should have charged all the police officers, and it was a conspiracy, et cetera. They would have got convictions of them all. But I just think everybody knew what they were doing to get the cops off the hook, et cetera. Follow me now. They charged Grillo, Officer Grillo, the guy who jumped on the hood of the car and shot 15 bullets directly into the windshield, with voluntary manslaughter. He waived his right to a jury trial. Uncommon. You're guaranteed under the Constitution to a jury trial. Though, if you think, I'm talking about my experience as a lawyer almost 50 years. I remember when I was young and doing some criminal work, twice I waived the jury and tried the case in front of the judge because, one, the jury wouldn't understand what I was talking about. It had to be a very technical defense. And number two, in my preliminary discussions with the court, with the prosecution present, the judge sort of indicated he didn't think the prosecution had a case. So I gambled. I told my client, waive it. I think we're better off. And each time we won. Anyhow, put that aside. What happened with Officer Grillo? He had his trial this week. And guess what the judge did? He found him not guilty. He acquitted him. And the judge says, look, here's why. He says, there were all these bullets, 137 bullets. He said, which ones killed the people in the car? How can we say Officer Grillo's bullets did it? It could have been one of the others. And so there's a reasonable doubt that he is responsible or guilty of involuntary manslaughter. That's why I say the prosecution did something wrong here, grossly wrong, in not indicting all of them if they were going to go after somebody. It makes me think everything's rigged, and I know that's terrible. So, what happens now? What happens now? Here's my problem with all this. I mentioned 2 weeks ago on this show that right now we have police officers pursuing blacks and shooting and killing blacks, and they shouldn't be. I know some blacks are out there now shooting white cops in the head. On the other hand, if you look at the numbers are, I think, over 700 in a year blacks are killed by police officers, and something like 70 police officers were killed. Not one should be killed in either group, understand me, but that's the way it is. And I said, the black people have to become aroused and are becoming aroused because they don't see the justice system of this country doing them any good. It is a white America, not a black America, even though we gave them all their rights with the Civil War and further affirmed them under Johnson in 1968, 1970. They still don't have those rights. It's a white man's society. What can I tell you? It's a white man's society out there. And the laws over the years have been created and made and passed so they benefit police officers in these situations. And so the black people at some point, besides demonstrating, besides protesting, besides starting fires, it's going to move into real physical violence, one against the other. But I believe, and this is the point I was making 2 weeks ago and the point I make tonight, eventually if something is not done, and I believe what I'm going to say now will occur in the near future, this is going to become a black-white war. It isn't going to be just the blacks against the police officers. It's going to be the blacks against the rest of society, the white people. We are in a very dangerous situation, my friends. Let's talk about pregnancy. Having babies is a nice issue. Pregnancy. I got two situations here that are wild. There's a 65-year-old German grandmother who her name is Annegret Resnick, Agnegret Rasnick. She just gave birth at 65 to quadruplets. 65, four kids, three boys, one girl. Came out prematurely at 26 weeks. The doctors say, though, this has just happened this past week, that she has a good the children, the babies, have a good chance to survive. Now, my concern with this whole thing is she's 65. What is she, nuts? Well, maybe it was an accident. It wasn't. First, she already has 13 children. She already has 13 children. She has seven grandchildren. She's not a stupid woman. She's very intelligent. She is an English and Russian teacher in Berlin. English and Russian teacher in Berlin. She wanted to have another baby. She wanted to have multiple birth. So she went to a fertility clinic in the Ukraine and took fertility treatments. And as a result, now the 65-year-old woman has four more children. She's up to 17. It bothers me. I mean, everybody's entitled to have a baby whenever they want, but at 65, these people won't be around if these kids graduate from college. These people aren't going to be there to give them proper counseling and advice 15, 20 years from now because they're out of society, so to speak. I know. I'm going to be 80 years old in less than 2 months. I would not want to be a father at this stage again. I don't think I could give my children, the new children, the knowledge, experience, and education they might need. So that's what this woman in Germany did, which now brings me to another situation. There is, their names are, this is a 40-year-old couple. They already have 12 children, all boys, naturally born. They're very prolific, this couple. 40 years old, they had 12 children, all boys. Their names are Kateri and Jay Schwant. On the 13th pregnancy, they were hoping it would be a girl because, after all, they had 12 boys. It's time for a girl. But their practice with the previous pregnancies was never to determine, never to learn the gender of the child until the time of birth. They did not want to be told. The baby was born this past week. Guess what? It was another boy. So now they got 13 boys. Interestingly, one of the older sons said, you know, after number seven, it becomes kind of routine. After number seven, it became kind of routine, all these other babies. That's a lot of kids. Everyone has a right to do this. And we did it in this country, and we did it in European countries up to about maybe 100 years ago because we were an agrarian society, not an industrial society. People lived and worked on farms. They needed their children to help them work the farm. They had a lot of children because along the way, children would die. We had all these diseases. We couldn't control them like we do today. And so maybe it was a necessity then. But now, 13 children, oh, my God. And it's another boy, which brings up the story of my mother. My mother was born in Italy. She was the eighth and last born of eight children. The first seven were boys. Same situation, just a smaller number. The first seven were boys. My mother, number eight, she's born in Italy again, was a girl. Her parents, my grandparents, were so excited, so delighted that they finally had a girl that they named her Fortunata. Fortunata is Italian for fortune. They thought it was good fortune that they had a girl, and that girl became my mother. Let's talk about marijuana for a second. We now have a new Drug Enforcement Administration chief, a new DEA chief. They take care of the drugs in this country. They control it. They watch it. They're the FBI of drugs, all right? And the new DEA chief, his name's Chuck Rosenberg, he's a former administrator at the FBI, announced this past week that the DEA no longer will focus on marijuana. They will no longer focus on marijuana. They're not going to go out and help arrest people on marijuana charges. They're not going to get involved with marijuana. And the reason is that, what's the sense of going after sellers and users anymore? Because generally these are small amounts, but whether they're small or big, most states are lowering penalties in pot cases, okay? And he thinks it's just a waste of time and money to arrest them, and He said, I'm not going to do it anymore. Instead, what I'm going to do is I'm going to look at the DEA's procedures on classifying, declassifying, and reclassifying drugs. Well, I don't know which one of those two is wise, but I do know this, and I believe this. We have today, and you hear about this all the time, an overcrowding in our jails. Overcrowding in our jails. And this is very costly. I've said this on the show many times. I've said it on my other shows and in writing, that it costs an average of $85,000 a year to keep a prisoner in jail for a year. 85 grand per prisoner. I don't know how many prisoners we got. We got the most people in jail of any country in the world. And not only of any country, but the next five countries combined, we still have more people in jail than they do. So we're doing something wrong. We haven't been able to control pot. And there's talk now, too, we got to let people out of jail. There was a time starting in the 60s where it was zero tolerance. I can remember New York State Governor Rockefeller said, we catch you with a drug, we put you in jail for 20 years. If you're caught with a half a bag of marijuana, half an ounce, if you're caught with a joint, you go to jail for a long term. You know, and no mercy, because he thought this was going to get rid of the problem. Obviously, it did not. We know what's going on. So now we hear the government, statewide and federally, saying, we've got to look at how we sentence people, because these are really victimless crimes. It isn't somebody shot somebody, knifed someone, hit someone over the head, robbed a store with a gun. These are non-victim type crimes. No one gets hurt but the person probably smoking the joint if you think it's bad. And so we got to get out of this business, he says. What I wonder about, and my concern is this, what about all these people that are in jail today, going back 20, 30, 40 years, I'm not exaggerating, because they're in there on minor drug problems, victimless crimes, but they got that hard, severe sentence, and they're still in jail. We got to let these people out. It doesn't make sense, and I hope they do. And so you understand that I know what I'm talking about, because this just happened this year. I'm going to talk about a fella in Shreveport, Louisiana, by the name of Vincent Winslow, 45 years old, black man. He was homeless, and he was hungry. And as he's walking along the street, someone comes up to him and says, hey, he says, I don't want to go buy the pot myself. Go get me a $20 bag of weed. Now, to me, a $20 bag of weed has to be one or two joints at the most, but whatever it is, it's nothing, okay? Go buy me a $20 bag of weed, and I will give you $5. So he gave him the $20. And when you come back with the weed, I am going to give you $5 for doing it. Well, Winslow did it because he said, I was hungry. I wanted the $5 for food. Turned out, that the fellow giving him the money to buy the pot for him was a police officer, an undercover agent. And as soon as he came back with the $20 worth of weed to get his $5, he was arrested. There was a trial. He was found guilty of distribution of pot. You know what his sentence is? Life in prison at hard labor with no parole. This just happened this year in Shreveport, Louisiana. Life in prison at hard labor with no parole. That's the show for this week. I hope you found it interesting. I enjoyed putting it together. I enjoyed sharing my thoughts with you and what is occurring. The show's archived, as you know. You can pick it up during the week on Blog Talk Radio, YouTube, and on Facebook in my Key West Lou and Louis Patron websites. I wrote a book, The World Upside Down. If you like this show, buy my book. If you don't like this show, don't buy my book. You will not enjoy it. The book is available on Amazon.com. Thank you again for joining me this week. I look forward to sharing some more thoughts with you next week.